This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we have a lot to get to. Obviously, the Patriots cut the roster down from, I believe they were at around 87 players technically, not at the full 90. Cut it all the way down to 53 yesterday. And Adam, this was one of the crazier cutdown days that I can remember. Just trades going on, obviously not including the Patriots. The Texans and the Dolphins pulled off the trade of the day, an absolute blockbuster. So we're going to get to all of that. But wait, can you believe the NFL preseason? It was actually the NFL regular season is almost underway at this point, Adam.
It's about time. I'm just ready for it. I can believe it.
Let's get it ready. To celebrate another season kickoff, BetOnline.ag and CLNS Media are giving you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Head over to BetOnline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sideline this football season. Get into all the action with BetOnline.ag. Your online sportsbook experts. A minimum deposit of $55 is required to qualify for the bonus. And I think we should start with the quarterbacks. Obviously, not very big news because Tom Brady is the starting quarterback for those New England Patriots. But the Patriots did decide to pick rookie Jared Stidham over Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer is now out. He is now a free agent. What was your reaction? I think this was the first kind of big shoe to drop yesterday, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of expected them to carry all three guys, but Stidham's, he's not ready to be the guy, but he's ready to be a backup in my opinion.
Yeah.
He looked good enough to me to, obviously I think he still holds onto the ball a little bit too long. When he's looking at stuff, but I mean, he's a rookie, of course, that's going to happen. But the way he extends plays with his feet and recovers from adversity and stuff like that, I think there's a lot of potential there. And I think it's fine to have him there, not Hoyer.
Yeah, I think that he has closed the gap enough from between him and Brian Hoyer that to carry an extra body at quarterback, it didn't make sense. And I was looking at Brian Hoyer from the angle of scout team and, watching game tape and working on mechanics and doing all almost as an extra quarterback coach in the room, more so than actually what he was on the field. And that was where I saw most of Brian Hoyer's value to this team. But the Patriots obviously had to weigh, was that important enough for them to keep him and cut somebody else elsewhere because they had to keep an extra quarterback? The history tells you with Bill Belichick that if you can carry two quarterbacks, he's carrying two quarterbacks. There's really only a few times in this last decade where he's carried three quarterbacks. The only time that he's actually done it technically was 2016 when he carried Brady, Garoppolo, and Jacoby Brissett. But Brady was suspended, so that was part of the reason. But I think that those three guys were going to make the roster no matter what because of the draft picks that they used on Garoppolo and Brissett. Like you said, Stidham has a ways to go, mentally for me especially, just getting rid of the ball on time and reading through coverages the way that they want them to and making the right decisions within the framework of the scheme. But as far as a backup goes, I think that he's got that already, and he's obviously a more talented thrower of the football than Brian Hoyer is.
Yep. It's just tough. It's tough to see Hoyer go just for the fact that he is, a good, well-respected confidant of Brady. And
But
we've been talking about how deep this roster or how deep this, that first 90-man roster looked. You're going to have to make some tough decisions, there's good and decent players who have to get, cut and moved on from when you have that many guys who can play on an NFL team.
Yeah, it was a numbers game for Brian Hoyer, and the Patriots obviously went with the depth elsewhere And another guy that was victim to the numbers game a little bit here was Demaryius Thomas. I think that once the Hoyer thing broke, we're going to get to the Gunnar Olszewski saga here in a second too, which was obviously a whirlwind. But with Demaryius, I don't think anybody saw this one coming after his performance in the fourth preseason game. Now, the kind of the word on the street is right now that Demaryius, as soon as the Patriots free up another roster spot, he's going to be back. But I was out at practice today and everybody was there. The whole 53 was there. So if they are going to put somebody on IR to return, it's not been clear, hasn't been made clear yet who exactly that guy is going to be. But let's start with, you know, just a reaction to them cutting Demaryius, and also, you know, do you see him coming back? And do you think that this was all in the cards, you know, that he was going to come back?
I don't know. I don't know if it was all in the cards or not, but I think it makes sense to keep that door open.
Yeah.
It really looked good the other night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know how much of Olszewski's performance had to do with it. Because, you know, maybe they saw it, you know, saw a position somewhere else. But I think, like, with, I mean, this sort of goes into the, you know, the Gunner part a little bit. But, like, when I saw them put Gunner on defense and, like, you know, he was willing to accept that role and stuff like that. And he didn't, you know, obviously he gave up whatever, but he wasn't totally out of place out there.
Yeah.
He's a guy who can contribute on special teams. He's a guy that can play on offense, and he showed he can, you know, at least know what he's doing a little bit on defense. That's a guy you're going to keep if you're trying to make the Patriots. And he did all those things well. Now, is it for saying about Thomas, like, one of those deals where, hey, you know, it's, we just like this other guy's versatility more, you know, that might be it. But you really do want to leave the door open as much as you can for Thomas, because, you know, he is pretty good. I saw enough the other night to think, all right, well, I still think he has. I didn't really know one way or the other before. I think everybody could see his talent. You know, who knows? If Josh Gordon goes down, you don't know what's going to happen there. So, you know, you want to keep those – you want to keep it open.
Yeah, that's definitely his skill set. Demaryius is really great as like a backup to both Josh Gordon and N'Keal Harry. I think that's why maybe, you know, I didn't expect Demaryius Thomas to be a huge contributor for this team this year, but I did look at him as a nice depth piece. But it's funny because what you said about Gunner's versatility, I threw that out there on Twitter last week about how Demaryius is not going to contribute in the kicking game. Right. He is just a wide receiver. With a guy like Gunner in the mix, you know, Gunner obviously can contribute in the kicking game and that versatility. And Gunner said today that he's not playing defensive back, that was in the fourth preseason game. That was solely they had no other bodies to put in there. And they said, go out and do your best. But he's not training. He's not practicing to play any corner. He's practicing as a wide receiver and a player in the kicking game on special teams. Now, could it be a Julian Edelman or Troy Brown situation where they have a million injuries at corner and they have to throw him in there in a game? Obviously, it could, but that's not in the cards. He's here to play wide receiver and to return kicks. So that's what he told me. I think with Demaryius, though, the interesting thing is obviously there is some sort of gamesmanship here where Demaryius is a vested veteran, so he doesn't have to go through waivers. And I think that when they cut Gunner earlier in the day, the first time, they realized that Gunner was going to get picked up by somebody through waivers, that somebody was going to put a waiver claim on him. So they took that risk with Demaryius. And it's similar to like the risk that they've taken with Brandon Bolden, for example, in the past. So it's a little bit risky because they lost Bolden last year to Miami when they cut Bolden and thought that they had a wink-wink deal.
But he didn't do anything again.
No. And it was fine. You know, they still won the Super Bowl and everything was fine. So it is what it is. I think what's interesting about it is who is going to – everybody's kind of under the assumption because all these reports are out there, and I'm not saying the reporters are lying. I'm just saying all the reports are out there that somebody on the Patriots – current 53-man roster is going on IR, and Demaryius Thomas is going to take that guy's spot. That's kind of been the narrative, the spin that's coming out of all the reports. And yet today we show up to practice and all 53 guys are there. So it is, I don't know who that guy is. We can obviously guess and throw some names out there. I mean, N'Keal Harry's been thrown out there. Let's hope it's not him. Shalique Calhoun's been thrown out there. Damian Harris has actually been thrown out there by some, which I think is interesting because, one, he's been hurt a little bit in the preseason, been banged up. He has a hand injury. And, two, they're extremely deep at running back. So do they need all those running backs right away? Probably not. But if you bring Damian Harris back in week 9 and has some fresh legs, that's actually not a horrible kind of equation there. So maybe he's the guy that ends up being, or maybe it doesn't happen at all. And all these reports about Demaryius coming back are Demaryius' side of the coin trying to stir up buzz. The other thing I think is interesting with Demaryius is just last week, he told us that the Patriots were the only team that called him when he was a free agent. One team, the New England Patriots, were the only team out of the entire league that called him. So the Patriots, I think, knew that the rest of the league wasn't all that interested in Demaryius Thomas. And the only game tape that he has is that fourth preseason game. That's the only thing anybody's seen of him all summer. And it was against a bunch of AAF and CFL corners. So I think that they had a pretty good feeling that Demaryius Thomas wasn't going to have some sort of massive, type of market here. So that I think is part of it too. But I think we got to talk about Gunner, obviously. We knew that one. With Gunner, I think, just to kind of set the stage here, what's crazy about it, so he's cut at 11 a.m. on Saturday on cut down day. They cut him. Then the Houston Texans call with about 15 minutes left in the cut down day, 4 p.m. deadline, maybe 30 minutes left. And they offer Bill Belichick a 6th-round pick for Keon Crossan. And the trade goes through with Keon and obviously with the 6th-round pick. And the Patriots call Gunner back up and say, we want you on the team. So he thought he was cut, and then he gets back on the team. I mean, I think, aside from that craziness, just what do you see? Do you see it from Gunner more than I do? And what do you see his role being moving forward?
I think he's a very good return man. I like, I don't know how quickly he sees the field at wide receiver, but when he gets the ball, he kind of has that really good downhill running style as soon as he gets it and sort of finishes his runs hard. He's got pretty good speed. I'm not sure exactly what it would be outside of, the returns at this point, just because, they've got so many guys there right now. But he can, I think he can play, from what I've seen, he's just a good yards after the catch guy. And he's pretty physical too. I liked what I've seen. He's been good, but as far as putting him, on the field over certain other guys at this point, I don't know. I don't know how, they utilize him and all that stuff, but I think when he gets in there, he's the type of guy that, can be a plus in the passing game.
Yeah, he's an explosive guy. He has a gear that, and you see it on the on punt returns and specifically where he's a natural with the ball in his hands, and he does have an explosiveness and a burst element to him. And he's actually shown some pretty good vision too in some of his punt returns. He had that one, I believe it was actually the third preseason game, where he was kind of in a cloud, a big pile up, it seemed like, and he saw kind of a little opening and he was able to move laterally and run up the sideline, and he ran over the punter at the end. And you see that, and you do see it. I think the biggest thing with me with Gunner is what you said, is that this notion that he's like this wide receiver, defensive back, special teams ace, all rolled into one, is right now projection and just kind of what he could be someday, right? And I think that we're very quick to say when you see a player like Gunner, he's the next Julian Edelman. He's the next Troy Brown. You know, he's that next guy. And I think that that's almost selling guys like Edelman short for how much work they had to put in to become four down players. Right. You know, Edelman put in hours and hours of work, but that aside, he put in seasons of work. You know, it took Edelman 4 or 5 years. It took Danny Amendola. Danny Amendola was bouncing around on practice squads and stuff like that for a couple of years before he got his big break. It's not something that's going to happen automatically. So could Gunnar be those things 2, 3, 4 years down the road? Maybe. But right now for this team in 2019, he is only returning kicks. And I think that, or maybe covering kicks too a little bit. And I think that, you know, to look at this trade, because it really truly was Keon Crossan or Gunnar Olszewski. Like, that was a decision that they made. It was Keon Crossan in a sixth round pick, or Gunnar Olszewski in a sixth round pick, or Keon Crossan. And we both really love Keon Crossan, so that it might be partly biased on our, you know, on my part, I should say. And but at the same time, I look at Keon as a player that was already kind of showing signs of developing into a four down player, and I had hopes that Keon was not only going to be able to contribute on special teams at a high level, but also play a little bit of cornerback in this league too. So In my mind, they gave up on a player that has much more potential to be a four down player in Keon Crossan for a guy that I think is probably destined to more be just a return specialist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I still think Olszewski can grow into that though, in terms of being a receiver. You know, in the short term, sure, I can see him, you know, just being on special teams. But I think he can sort of grow into a greater role just because of his, you know, physical ability. He looks like a natural, well, not natural, but like, you know, he looks like, you know, he knows how to, you know, catch the ball and make yards after the catch and be a factor on offense. I feel like with this group currently, this current wide receiver group, it's going to be harder for him to get on the field. And obviously, he's like very, very young. But I think, you know, I think there is potential for him, though, to grow into something. I wouldn't close the door on him, you know, contributing on, you know, a wide receiver. But I agree with your, you know, your stuff about Keon, though. Like, I thought, you know, everybody knows how high I was on Keon Crossan.
Yeah, right. We're on the record multiple times on this
one. Yeah, I know. So it's tough to see him go. But, you know, it's, I think that, you know, these are, the types of hard decisions you make when you get a lot of good players on your roster.
Yeah. We're also talking about the 53rd, literally the 53rd player on the current roster. And, yeah. And Keon was the 54th guy in this scenario, you know, so it's a good problem to have. we're not talking about guys that, like, they had to cut, like, the Browns cut their starting left tackle today. You know, the Patriots are not in that position, which is good news. And I'm definitely not closing the door on Gunnar eventually being there. I think my biggest thing is the overhyping of him a little bit. And I get it, because he's such a great story, and his competitiveness, and even the way that he talks to us is just hilarious. Like, you know, he's just that classic, like, Southern, you know, boy. He's like talking to his mama after they made the call the second time to say that he was on the team and stuff like that. So I get it. I just think that there's this kind of automatic knee-jerk reaction to compare every player with Gunnar's skill set to Julian Edelman and say that he's the next guy, you know?
They don't really necessarily play the same way either, I don't think.
No, I mean, he has the same kind of, like, reckless abandon as Julian. You know, like, he has that same, like, you know, Edelman is so, what makes Edelman so good is how competitive he is and how willing he is to sacrifice his body and just, like, throw himself into piles and stuff like that. And Gunnar does have that kind of element.
Right. Yeah. I guess so. Maybe everybody's
right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody's right. Maybe Bill Belichick's right. Bill Belichick this morning said that Gunnar, I think that he has enough talent to play in this league. So Yeah, Bill Belichick thinks he has enough talent to play in the league, and he probably does.
He's probably right. Yeah.
And that's all that we have to say about that. Keon, I think we touched enough on Keon. Let's quickly touch on Duke Dawson here, who we're not going to take too much of a victory lap here, but we did at the time of the pick. Neither one of us were huge fans of the pick. Didn't really see the field or see Duke the way that the Patriots were claiming that they saw him. And obviously now, you know, they part with him for a 7th round pick.
Yeah, it's too bad. There's other guys, I would have liked them to take there. But I just think, he wasn't the type of athlete to really stay with guys in space to make tackles in space.
Tackling was a huge issue in training camp. Couldn't tackle anybody.
Yeah, it's just in space especially. He was a decent tackler when he had the easy hits in college. There was less space for the ball carrier to maneuver around. I don't understand, a lot of the things that people saw and liked about him. I just wasn't crazy about him, but, it's good that the Patriots didn't just say, hey, we like him. He's going to be good. They said, all right, we know we made a mistake, and they got rid of it and got rid of him. So I think it's smart of them to move that quickly on it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And in college, when we watched his tape, I think that one thing that stood out about him in college is that he was around the ball a lot, and both getting his hands on the ball, and he did make a lot of tackles. Now, we talked about this yesterday, and that's partially because they were targeting him all game. So that kind of leads to being around the ball a lot as a corner when you're getting thrown at a lot. But he did have a nice playmaker skill set to him in college, where he's deflecting a lot of passes and things of that nature. The thing that I always saw with him, and in training camp this year, in the games, and even back in college, was at the top of the route, he did not have the hip, looseness or the quickness, I should say, to transition at the top of routes and stick with guys. So every single time he'd be in good position all the way through the stem, and then a guy from the slot where you're going to have to face some shifty guys would make a quick move, and he would just be toasted. He just wouldn't be able to keep up with that quick move. I thought at the time watching it over and over again, I'm like, maybe, he's best as more like a box safety and playing him on tight ends and all that kind of role. But I do feel like sometimes that we just try to say that about any guy that can't cover wide receivers. Like, let's just throw him on tight ends and see if that works. Right. It seems like we do that all the time now. And I think that, it might have worked. But the other thing is what you mentioned with the tackling in space. Okay, so every cornerback is going to give up a couple of catches here and there. Even Stephon Gilmore gives up receptions every once in a while, right? But best ones, and Gilmore is really good at this, the best ones limit yards after the catch. Yeah, you give up a catch, but you're getting the guy down on the ground. You're not letting guys run all over the field. Duke Dawson, when he gave up catches, also couldn't make the tackle to get the guy down on the field. So he was giving up all sorts of yak in practice, and he was trying to swat balls down and deflect passes because he knew he wasn't going to be able to get the guy on the ground. And that was just a real big concern. And if you're going to play in the slot and you can't transition and you can't stick with guys at the top of routes, and then you can't tackle, you can't play in the slot in the NFL. That's just not where you're not going to survive there. I mean, you're facing guys like Julian Edelman and stuff like that every single week, and you can't tackle and you can't stick with quick guys at top of routes. You're going to have a long day. And that's exactly what happened to Duke Dawson. As far as the pick goes and the investment of the pick and all that kind of stuff, I understand where the kind of, the challenging of Bill Belichick comes from with these second round defensive backs. It's certainly not been a great track record, and he deserves blame for missing on a lot of these picks. But at the same time, he did, find J.C. Jackson, and he did find other corners later in the draft or an undrafted free agency. And I do think, that there's some kind of notion of it doesn't really matter how you acquire the players as long as you get the talent, you know, as long as you put together a talented roster. So to kind of pick on him for second round picks when he's finding guys in other rounds and through trades and through other types of free agencies, you know, both types, veteran and undrafted free agency. At the end of the day, if the 53 guys on the roster give them a competitive enough team to compete for Super Bowls, that's kind of what we're going for. So it really doesn't matter too much. But there is something about those second-round DBs. I mean, do you have a theory on it? I don't really have a
clear one. We were trying to come up with that the other day, that, like, you know, maybe it was, like, you take a chance on that guy in the second round who has, like, some sort of high upside, but, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe it's, you know, relying on, you know, somebody else too much for what
I think that is a really good point. And I think that relates a lot to Duke Dawson, because I remember you were actually at the post-draft presser talking to Nick Caserio about Duke Dawson. And I remember you saying that in listening to it, that he said that he played in a really good secondary at Florida and everybody in that secondary loved him. And he was kind of like a favorite of the group, and his work ethic was fantastic. It was a lot of things coming from the Florida coaching staff. It just sounded like they were kind of pumping his tires.
Right. Yeah. That could be it. You know, I mean, and that happens with area scouts and, you know, and schools and stuff like that. They want a player to maybe go to the Patriots because they know he'll be used right, you know, and maybe he'll look better. And then that, you know, the program looks better because look at who we, you know, look at who we got and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, that's something that does happen. But, you know, you usually don't, but it happens to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, like you were saying, like, you know, it doesn't matter how you get them together. They've put together a roster, you know, over and over and over again, that is like in the AFC Championship game or Super Bowl every single year now.
Yeah.
You know, so
for
you
know, a decade.
I miss there. If they're bad at second round defensive backs, whatever, you know,
yeah.
I think it's okay.
Second round DBs and just wide receivers anytime in the first, like, you know, 2 days of the draft. Let's hope, knock on wood, that doesn't happen with N'Keal Harry. But I think that, you know, any theory is as good as any other theory with this. It's kind of tough to nail down one specific thing. I think that, you know, there's a little bit of, like, not with Dawson. In Dawson's case, and I think in Jordan Richards' case also, and maybe in Cyrus Jones's case too, a lot of it was the guy. They drafted the guy. They liked the personality of the player. They liked where they came from. They liked the background checks and all that kind of stuff that they were getting from the coaches and the feedback, and they're coming from big programs and stuff like that. And they thought that Dawson and Jones and Richards and all these guys would fit the culture. They were just going to do your job, fit the culture, Patriot way, all that kind of stuff. On the other side of the coin is drafting based off of athletic upside. That's where you get, like, the Rozai Dowlings of the world. He was long, he was athletic, he checked every single box that every coach wants in a corner, and he was really raw, and his work ethic wasn't so great, and they drafted him anyways, and that has a flop. But then also, you know,
Rozai Dowling also from Al Groh connection.
Yep.
That he might have been telling him, like, you know, oh, you know, don't worry about this, he's, you know, whatever.
Right. And then, you know, but the other side of the coin is that there are a lot of really good hits in the second round that they have. Yeah. I mean, they drafted Rob Gronkowski in the second round, which at the time when they drafted Gronk, he was in the Rozai Dowling mold, kind of. You know, he was a guy that was injured a lot in college and had a major, major injury red flags, but was a fantastic athlete. And when he was on the field, he produced, you know, those types of things, and it worked out. So I think the end story here is that the draft is just a crapshoot, and sometimes dudes work out and sometimes they don't. And that's exactly what happened with Duke Dawson. All right, one last point here, then I have two big picture thoughts that I want to throw at you and see what you think. The Patriots, I talked to the three guys that they got today. They completely overhauled the backup offensive line. They said goodbye to Dan Skipper and James Ferentz. They put Yelda Froholt, who I really liked, but has got a long way to go. He's redshirting. He got the Foxborough flu. He did get an injury in the fourth preseason game, but I don't think the injury was serious enough to put him on IR. I think that they just thought he had a really long way to go and liked these guys that they brought in a little bit better. I think that this is an underrated storyline that kind of snuck up on people. I think that we knew that the left tackle position and how that worked out with Isaiah Wynn was going to be kind of sneaky all preseason and then something – a pretty major storyline. But after the starting five, behind the starting five, and then you throw in the David Andrews thing, obviously, I don't think that I talked enough about the lack of depth that they had on the offensive line, because they're going with all new acquisitions, guys that have been in the building for less than a week as the backups on the offensive line.
Yeah, I was surprised by all that because I thought their interior backup linemen weren't that bad.
They thought differently. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's for 100%. So
yeah,
I mean, it's like, you know, they must be very worried, as we said, about Andrews, and that's a very tough situation. You know, it's going to be tough right away. I think Karras is, you know, been in the system for a while, and there, you know, I agree with some people who thought like at times that, you know, Karras was like a starting caliber guy. I think he's a good, you know, center and interior guard, whatever. I think he can play those positions well. But you don't want to mess around with being sort of not ready in the center of your offensive line especially against the teams you're playing in the AFC East, who are really starting to get about their interior defensive linemen.
Seriously.
Just look at the draft.
Yep. Okay.
So, you know, I think, I like that move of bringing in guys. Cause again, like I think the overall theme with how they've been quickly making all these moves, they're not messing around in terms of, you know, waiting on stuff. They're just, they make their minds up and, you know, really try to like correct things fast.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, it's on the one side, it's the kind of panic that like, oh, wait a second, we have to really, flip things around here. But on the other, it's like they sort of know how bad their weaknesses are. You know, and that's sort of really, you know, a good thing to see, because you don't want them to just let these things lie at all. You got to get it right, and you got to get it right. The season's here, all the games count. So, you know, make those decisions fast.
It's a great point. I think that one of the things that Belichick does better than probably any other GM in all of football, and it's partially, I think, due to job security, that he has the security to move on from a second round pick in year two and not get fired for it. A lot of guys, a lot of other GMs that are new GMs are on the hot seat. You cut your second round pick from a year ago and he busted. That's another kind of, you know, notch in the let's fire this guy belt. You know what I mean? And it kind of adds up quickly for a lot of other GMs. Belichick doesn't have to worry about that. But I think what's great about Belichick is he is by far the best GM at scouting his own roster. Like, he knows exactly what his talent level is at certain positions. He knows exactly where they're thin. Like, I was out there at training camp every single day. I thought Froholt, James Ferentz, I didn't think Dan Skipper was good, but I knew that they were thin at tackle, but I really thought the guys on the interior, and maybe if the thing with Andrews never happens, they still are fine on the interior, because that kind of, you know, put Ted Karras, moved everybody up a rung, right? So now Ted Karras goes to starting center and Yelda Froholt's your top backup versus behind Ted Karras, at least for a year. So I think that is part of it, is that it did get escalated a little bit quickly because of that. But they're so good, like you said, at scouting their own roster and trimming the fat instantly and not thinking twice about it. And I want to touch on just the guys that they did get. Jermaine Illuminor, who I'm a really big fan of after watching his tape in Baltimore, the kind of spin out of the Baltimore side of things, was that Illuminor was out of shape. He failed a conditioning test, but he passed it the next day, and he was just out of shape all summer. And he did mention to me today that he's still kind of working his way into game shape. He said he's in practice shape, but he would like to be a little bit thinner than he is and drop a few more pounds. And he'd really like to be at a lower weight than he currently is. So he's had a little bit of weight issues. But I do think that he's the type of guy that he can back up 4 out of 5 spots on the offensive line. He can play both guard spots and both tackle spots and do it well. That is a really valuable player to have. He's like a Swiss Army knife now for the Patriots. And if there's an injury or if a player isn't playing well, probably, you know, more like an injury with that starting five, he can jump in right away and play pretty darn well and do it at any spot really besides center.
Yeah. And I think you really summed it up. You just want guys that can do a lot of different things at this point.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be prepared for the worst because something really bad has already happened.
Yeah.
You never know when you're going to need your depth, right? So just be prepared for it. And I think that was, you know, to have somebody that's that versatile is good.
Yeah, it's insane. He also lined up a little bit at tight end in Baltimore as like a sixth offensive lineman at the end of the line of scrimmage. And he worked, you know, a lot with Lamar Jackson last year, but he's worked with pocket passers like Joe Flacco in the past. Corey Cunningham, a big tackle, probably a little bit heavier on his feet than Illuminor is, but he absolutely killed the combine. He actually told me he was recruited as a tight end in college at 220 pounds.
Huh.
And he gained a bunch of weight in college, and they ended up moving him to tackle. So he is a little bit new to the position, but he's a great, great athlete. This is a guy that absolutely murdered the combine, like tested in the 95th percentile and pretty much everything. So he was really, really good athlete with that tight end background. He can play either right or left tackle. So I think Illuminor is actually probably the top guard and top tackle backup. Like, I think that he's probably like just like a utility man for them. But I think Cunningham is more like a third or probably like the fourth tackle in reality. But he's a player that I really like in terms of his skill set, and they'll work some things out with him, I'm sure, with his technique and move forward there. The third guy was Russell Bodine. That's how he told us to pronounce it. And he has 74 career starts. I think since 2015 or when he was drafted, nobody has started more games in the NFL than Russell Bodine. The thing is that he has not played very well in those 74 starts. It's been a little bit rough for him. He's primarily only a center, so he's definitely here to back up Ted Karras and maybe even push Ted Karras for that starting center job here in the next couple of weeks. He's had all sorts of problems so far in his career, so this is like a true Dante Scarnecchia project. You know, this is 100% a project, but he's a really strong dude. He put up 42 reps on the bench press at the combine, which is still the combine record for anybody, I'm pretty sure. And he's also just tough as nails, really tough guy, really strong guy, fits in well exactly what they're looking for as a center, good communicator, all those kinds of things. So I think they got three really good players, actually. As backups, guys that have started football games elsewhere that are going to be backups here in New England. Before we wrap it up, the last thing I did want to touch on was something that Greg Bedard actually wrote in the Boston Sports Journal that I don't want to go, you know, completely steal Greg's take or anything like that. But the one thing that he did mention about these roster cutdowns is that Bill Belichick is, other than a quarterback, of course, is investing in the veterans. You know, he's kept all these veterans on this roster. The Patriots would have the oldest roster ever to win a Super Bowl, topping only their roster last year. So the roster last year was already the oldest roster in the history of the Super Bowl to win the thing. The roster this year would be even older than that. And it's kind of a little bit like of you look at some of the individual moves. For instance, the fact that Rex Burkhead is still here and they're not giving that third or fourth running back spot to Damian Harris right away. The fact that guys like John Simon is still here and they're not just giving that to Chase Winovich right away. So I think all of us wrote at one point in time or spoke about kind of the rookie infusion and the young player infusion. Right. I don't think it's going to happen quite as fast as we thought it was going to, because they carried so many of these veteran players.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing too. It's not like you are rebuilding or anything like that. You have these young players who are very good players, and they can be sort of brought along a little bit slowly.
Yeah,
and you know, I think those are talented guys. You know, like, I think these are guys that could start, you know, elsewhere if they needed to. But it's good that they can bring them along a little bit more slowly, develop them, get them used to the systems, and you know, they've got good players. I mean, we knew before all the, you know, draft and everything like that, that they had a good roster coming back, you know? So, you know, like, I mean, look, I look at this team and I don't see like the huge glaring weaknesses other than like tight end.
Yeah. Which is, you know, they'll figure that out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, I like what they got. I mean, I think they got a really good team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point that they don't have to rush these guys into it. Like, I think on one hand, and Greg's point was kind of that, could Chase Winovich replicate what John Simon's going to give you? Could Obi Melifonwu replicate what Daron Harmon's going to give you? Could J.C. Jackson replicate what Jason McCourty is going to give to you? All the answers to that questions are probably at least 75% of the way yes. But at the same time, those guys are all really young players. And like you said, you know, is it better? And I think the Patriots and Bill Belichick are saying it's better to bring those guys along slowly and lean on the veterans for at least one more year and bring them on a little bit slower. I think the disappointing thing is on some level is that out of last year's rookie class, there's only 5 guys left. You know, in every good draft class, you're looking for 3 to 4 starters. So the fact that they've hit that, you know, that quota kind of is a really good thing. But it's only Wynn, Michelle, Juwan Bentley, Ryan Izzo, and of course JC. So those 5 guys are the only guys that are still on the team from the 2018 rookie class. And the 2019 rookie class, it looks like most of those guys are behind a lot of veteran players at their positions and aren't going to have major roles this season, unless N'Keal Harry kind of just takes it by storm and steals it. So the only guys from the last 2 classes right now that are penciled in with major roles are Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel. Those are the only 2 guys that have like starting roles made out for them already. So the youth movement is on. It's just on in the back of the roster right now, and it's going to take a little bit a time to clear out some of the other veteran players. But at the same time, within a year or two here, guys like Jason McCourty and Daron Harmon and John Simon and some of these other names, they're going to clear out awfully fast. And those guys will have their day. So I guess you swayed me the other direction. I liked what you said about bringing them along slowly.
All right.
I'm easily swayed. Yeah. You haven't swayed me on Gunner yet, though. I'm still on the fence.
I just see like some potential for him there. Like, I think, like, especially like, you just get the ball in his hands and, you know, get some yards after the catch. I think he could do it. Of course, it would take work. You know, you don't just jump, you know, right in and, you know, nail this offense right away, but like, in terms of how he catches the ball and carries it after the fact, I'm impressed. So we'll
okay.
See.
All right. I'm buying it. All right. Good enough for me. I think people think that I have like something like personal against Gunner, and that's just like not the case at all. Like, it's really, it's like strictly business. It's strictly a football opinion. He seems like a great guy. I love the story. I think he's an awful lot of fun. And I think it's great that he's going to take punt returns from Julian Edelman, or at least if that's the plan, that I think that's a really good thing, especially with Edelman's thumb injury and all that kind of stuff. All right. What do you got to tease?
Oh, just a lot, man. I mean, this, let's see. I mean, next week is the first weekend of, starting Thursday, of local high school football. There's a lot of college football that happened this weekend already. We're going to touch on, you know, what BC, UMass, Holy Cross, Merrimack, now an FCS team, which we forgot to include in our predictions. But yeah, that's, and they won their first ever Division I football game. And they're coached by, chumps for great Dan Karin, who was on one of those great teams in the mid-90s. It's BC comes out and they beat Virginia Tech, even though they were 10, they beat Virginia Tech by 10 points last year in Blacksburg. They came up here, you know, after losing so many guys to the NFL, including a first round offensive lineman, and they were underdogs at home and then beat them again. So, I mean, there's a lot of good momentum for BC right now as a program. And then, you know, the other teams are also, going through their things. Like UMass has the Walt Bell in his first year, and they didn't look good, but they also didn't look like they quit either. And that's what a lot of their fans were sort of worried about, given like how some of the other games have looked in the past. So there's a lot of that stuff that I'm getting to this week and coming through.
There you go. Well, give me your 30-second take on Bo Nix, because I'm sure that you watched a little bit of that Oregon-Auburn game.
Yeah, that was bonkers. I was actually doing a bunch of other stuff when that game was going on. But, I think both quarterbacks in that game are good, obviously. Yeah. Herbert. It's just really entertaining stuff. It's a great first weekend of college football. I mean, you know, I'm just psyched that that's back.
Yeah, it's good to have it back. I was watching USC Fresno State. Got to watch my USC Trojans. And JT Daniels tore his ACL, which is great, the starting quarterback for SC. But Tyler Vaughn's played out of his mind, wide receiver at SC, who's going to be in the NFL. We talk about this all the time about SC. They always find wide receivers. Like, the rest of their team can be awful. They always got a guy that can run a 4.4 and is, like, going to the NFL at wide receiver. And Tyler Vaughn is following in the footsteps of Juju and, you know, all those other guys that have been there over the past couple of decades at that position. So, college football is back, though, and that is very great. And NFL football, week from tonight, we're recording this on Sunday night, the Patriots will be kicking off against the Pittsburgh Steelers, believe it or not. Pretty crazy.
That was a bird just outside my window. Sorry. It wasn't, nice. It wasn't a notification from a phone. It wasn't a tweet or something. That was an actual bird.
It was an actual bird. All right. Don't let it chill. You know, don't harm birds, people. But on clnsmedia.com, I'm going to write about the new offensive lineman we talked a little bit about today on the podcast for early this week. And I wrote a kind of roster recap of everything that happened yesterday that it will also be up. And then starting on around Tuesday or Wednesday, it's on to Pittsburgh. I mean, here we go. It's week one and Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know the Patriots have a pretty good history against Pittsburgh, but they did lose to Pittsburgh last year. Hate to remind people of that. But that was a very painful game that really did not go well, particularly for the Patriots offense. I don't sleep on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think that they have a much better roster than maybe they're getting credit for right now, just because they lost Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, which is obviously pretty big, losses. But at the same time, I really think that their roster is pretty good. And we'll have – go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I think people – and they have to love the fact that everybody's so crazy about the Browns.
Oh, yeah, Baltimore even.
Lamar Jackson or any – nobody's like – hyping the Steelers, even though they're
nobody believes in us. Nobody believes in the Steelers. They've only won six Super Bowls or whatever it is. But nobody. Hey,
but when you can play that card, you play it, right?
Yeah, the Patriots played it last year, so I can't. And I'm not saying they played it poorly. They played it really well. Yeah. And shout out to Kyle Van Noy, who played that card the best, more than maybe anybody else besides Tom Brady on that team. So I get it. I get the don't believe in us card. But I that's another organization that's just a program. It's like a college team.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it just doesn't really seem to matter who's, you know, the skill players or who they lose in the offseason. A lot like the Patriots, it's just a really well-run organization, and they just keep on, you know, making the playoffs and keep on putting up winning seasons. And I know they, you know, sometimes flop in the playoffs, especially in this kind of like triple B era with the killer bees, and that's over. So we'll see what happens. But Adam and I will be back next week with a recap show of Patriots Steelers. I am super psyched, Adam, that it's regular season football. We can start talking about some real football. We're down to 53 players. It's go time now for the Patriots. But signing off until next time, for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.